OTB's Mount Rushmore. 32 counties, one county representative choosing their sporting Mount Rushmore. Some decisions are easy.
And I was seeing teachers who had never expressed any emotion whatsoever lose their mind when Sonny was running in that home straight, trying to catch that gold spot.
Others are controversial.
Mayo's greatest celebrity fan now helps him earn his place on Mayo's Mount Rushmore is Kevin Kilbane.
Join the debate across all our social channels at Off the Ball.
George O'Connor, 17 summers in purple and gold.
And catch the live decision-making over the next few months on OTB AM, live every weekday at 7.30 a.m. on OTB Sports Radio.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Hello there, you're very welcome along this evening. So we've got a great lineup on the show for you. Keith Wood and Ronan O'Gara will talk about confidence in good times and bad, their relationship on and off the field as well. That is Monday Night Rugby after 8 o'clock. On the football show at 9, we have a feature interview with John Barnes coming your way. Always provocative, interesting, thoughtful. That is on the way between 9 and 10. And then after the news round, Shane Ryan, golfing journalist, will talk to us about the match number two with Messrs. Woods, Mickelson, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady. Was actually pretty good. We had sharpened our pens on Twitter last night. We were ready and waiting to hate it, and it turned out it was not bad at all. 53106 is the text number. We are at Off the Ball on Twitter. Will O'Callaghan on News Round Duty this evening. Hi, Will.
Evening, Joe. How are things?
Very well. And Adrian Barry, hello to you.
Joe, apologies to start off with some abuse, but you're going to need to get a haircut sometime soon.
Yeah, it's coming, isn't it? It's definitely coming.
Oh, my God. I've just caught sight of you there. Woof.
Yeah, no, it's starting to head that way. It's starting to head
how
that
much,
way.
How much, what sort of growth? Is that 8-10 weeks there?
Must be about that. I haven't really kept track. How long are we in this now?
It is about that. All right, yeah.
About 10, 11 weeks now, yeah?
It's about 10 to 12 weeks growth, I would say, Adrian.
Oh, Joe, seriously.
It's really flared up.
A man like you is worried about his image after the fact, right? But don't be, because the stadium at the minute, just get it sorted.
It can't go any further downhill.
It's bad.
We should make a point there, noting, wasn't that nice to hear? No new deaths. No new deaths.
Class.
The death tally for COVID-19 today is zero. And 59 new cases, of course, and the total number of deaths at 1,606. Not to suddenly look past that all of a sudden. But for the first day since March 21st, we have not started this show without hearing about deaths in the news headlines. So that is brilliant. They may well come tomorrow, of course, and there may well be a second surge. But it is still a very nice milestone, heroic workers on the front line, community effort. So that is good. I didn't know if we were going to get there this soon, Adrian, but that is very good.
Ah, it's class. And like you say, there will be definitely more dark days ahead, but we should definitely acknowledge and celebrate this for what it is. We long for that day where it's the last announcement of a death from this bloody thing. Yeah. But we'll take today.
For sure. Meanwhile, I think, Will, you were watching it as well. Dominic Cummings has had a bad afternoon.
Yeah, he had a very unusual afternoon. We learned a few kind of interesting things. I mean, if you have eyesight problems or if you think you're going blind, going for a 30-minute drive is probably the best way to go. Don't drive as you'd intended to go towards London. Go see a castle and absolutely guarantee you don't get out of that castle and make any kind of interaction with people. Make sure you go to a woods where nobody else sees you. If you go to see your family home as well, make sure you shout to people across the farm as opposed to any potential contact inside the house. Amazing how Dominic Cummings could have broken maybe 3 or 4 of the rules in the UK, but still found a way to just about circumvent them and make sure he didn't see anybody. Some real highlights were CCTV would prove my location if that footage existed. And I had a conversation with the Prime Minister, but neither of us can remember the conversation at all.
Yeah. This press conference went on for over an hour. I don't know if you saw it, Adrian. I mean, he did, in fairness, there was a point where I thought, in fairness, he's making it clear here, he didn't go up and down to Durham a few different times. Maybe there should be an allowance. And the rules allow for somebody who has a young child that needs looking after. Maybe there's some kind of an allowance here. But when they asked him about the visit to Barnard Castle, you know, why was this drive in the midst of it all?
Yeah.
So you've got to think they were sitting around a cabinet or sitting there with Boris and a few others saying, well, how do we square that one away? And between them, they've come up with the conclusion that his eyesight was off. He was saying, my eyesight was dodgy.
Stop. Weird.
And so,
weird vision.
And so we had weird vision. And so we wanted to test out if I could drive back to London. So we strapped in our 4-year-old child into the back seat and we went for a drive, and then we stopped off at a stream for a while, and how did no one go, that mightn't wash, Dominic?
Was she one of the reporters said to him, do you not think maybe like if that 30, 40 minute journey would have eaten into your trip to London, you could have just turned back anyway? And he seemed to go, ooh, good shout. I wish I'd thought about that. I don't know, should he be hammered about trying to do the best for his kid? I'm not sure. Like, you know what I mean? That is in itself a difficult one.
Yeah.
Right. Like the 4-year-old kid, both of them are, he says at some point, very severely ill. And the thought crosses your mind about how you're going to deal with your kid. I think that's fairly legitimate.
Yeah. I mean, I thought so too, to be fair. I thought there was a degree of reasonableness to what he did and how he laid it out. And if he hadn't been going up and down, as had been suggested in the media over the previous few days, I thought, okay. We do have to be some way fair to people here. But
he still went twice.
Did he go a second time?
Yeah, because that was basically what came out at the weekend. So we had the first trip up and down, and then the Mirror, and I'm going to say it was the Observer who had the joint report on Saturday, which said he had made a second trip. Now, he's denied some of the media reports around it.
Yeah, he denied that specifically today. He totally denied that today. He said that did not happen. That is incorrect.
Well, to me, the one thing is he's had loads of time to retrofit his story, and it's just been a remarkable turnaround from him as well, because he had complete contempt for the media when he was doorstepped on Saturday, understandably enough. Then next thing, the second story comes out and we see a very contrite version of Dominic Cummins this evening. So he's still going to be in place. He's still going to be there as one of the chief members of their negotiating team when it comes around to the Brexit negotiations in a week's time. And it's remarkable to think, like, it's almost like watching an episode of The Thick of It, where you actually have a government advisor who should really be in the background and should not be the story, ends up in front of the British media today. Like, it's remarkable stuff.
Yeah, it's all very surreal. And meanwhile, Brian O'Driscoll will be on OTB AM tomorrow morning talking about favourite memories, moments from the Aviva. Aviva, Ireland's largest insurer, they're marking the 10-year anniversary of the official opening of the Aviva Stadium and their proud long-term sponsorship of the venue. To celebrate, they're paying tribute to some of the more iconic sporting moments of the past decades. You can join in. You can follow Aviva Ireland on Instagram, Twitter, share your favourite Aviva Stadium memories using hashtag SafeToDream. Last week it was football. This week we are looking at the greatest rugby moments from the last 10 years, pitting them up against each other. Today, it was Robbie Henshaw's try against England in 2015, up against Leinster's win over Saracens in 2018. The very comfortable winner was Robbie Henshaw's try by a margin of 65% to 35. So he goes through to the next round, and that will continue all week. Brian O'Driscoll will be on OTB AM tomorrow discussing his favourite moment in the Aviva. My initial thought, Adrian, I haven't even looked into all the contenders, but I presume Ireland beating New Zealand at the Aviva, that's the front runner at the moment for all this?
Yeah, the Stockdale try specifically, I think, is the moment of that. Look, it's difficult. There's been some great days for Leinster there over the last number of years that I'd be leaning towards. But I think that when it comes to, like, obviously the Munster fans have been out in force today, Joe, that I just don't want. I mean, even in the times that we have in it, they don't want Leinster getting an edge on them, and they're voting for Ireland. But I think Ireland beating New Zealand, that's got to be it.
It's the early front runner. Okay, let's get into the newsround. Will, I don't have your newsround in front of me, so I'm flying blind here. Where are you starting?
We're starting with players, Joe, from four League of Ireland clubs who have qualified for Europe have undergone COVID-19 testing today. Dundalk, Shamrock Rovers, Derry City and Bohemian squads were tested ahead of their return to training, which is on June the 8th. That's about a month ahead of the rest of the Airtricity League teams. Those clubs will take part in a pilot tournament behind closed doors later this summer as well, ahead of the possible resumption of the league. At Lone Town boss Adrian Carberry says the rest of the teams are going to be watching on keenly over the next 12.
It's essentially that they get playing, because it is Europe, and it's a lot of them who have budgeted that money in, you know, to what they're doing, and it's a vital source of funding for them. So it is vital that they get back playing, and hopefully all goes well, that they're able to get through without anyone getting sick or, you know, any knock-on effects from it, and we can move forward. That's what everyone is watching with bated breath to see how this goes. Alan Byrne, the doctor in charge looking after all this, the medical side of things, it would be done right, and no one would be left the chance. And it'll go smoothly, please God, and then we can all look at opening up. The four teams are in Europe, be back just a bit earlier. They're back in the 8th of June training, and hopefully all goes well there with them, and then it can lead to us getting back, just getting back in the groups, and hopefully it can get better where we can get bigger groups back in again, and then, of course, eventually get back to playing at some stage this year. Would be absolutely brilliant for us at this stage, just to get back playing.
Yeah, it sure would. So that's good news. Dundalk, Shamrock Rovers, Derry City, Bohemians all tested ahead of hopefully returning to training on June 8th. I have your news right now, Will. Sorry about that. So Premier League next.
Yeah, groups of two or three Premier League players, lads, are going to be allowed to resume contact training and share equipment like balls under new UK government guidance about restarting sport. Clubs will discuss the proposals tomorrow ahead of the vote on Wednesday. All the suggestions are that it's going to be a clean sweep in terms of the votes. And former Liverpool midfielder Jamie Redknapp expects all the top flight clubs now to give the plans the go-ahead.
With what's happened in Germany, I've got no doubt that the vote will go ahead, and I think the players will... Or the clubs will vote to try and get phase two going, which is obviously important. I also think there'll be a situation where more players will opt out, but that's fine. That's their prerogative. They're allowed to do whatever they want. But I'll be amazed now if we don't, because of the success in Germany, that it's not been great. We've watched it all the weekend. It's not the product we really like with no fans there, but at least it's football. So I'll be very surprised if it doesn't go ahead. The bottom clubs, everyone's saying it. I'm sure they're looking at the bottom six thinking, what's the upside for us? They really will. There's no doubt at all. They'd much prefer null and void. But that doesn't seem the scenario right now. But again, every single scenario has to get played out. They have to manage everything, because you don't know if a load of players go down with coronavirus from a couple of teams. You have to then play out that situation with what might happen and what if they can't fulfil the fixtures. So at least they're doing it. And fingers crossed we can get football back on the menu very soon.
Tom has texted in to ask about his namesake, Adrian. Lads, how satisfying was it to watch Tom Brady implode for the first hour last night on the golf? Highly satisfying, I would say.
Oh, incredibly pleasurable to watch that. What a sensation that was last night. I loved it.
Are you being sarcastic?
No, not at all. Oh. Honestly, I missed the first three holes, and then I saw, I'd be 100% honest, I totally forgot it was even happening, and I saw McIntyre and Murphy tweeting about it, got onto them to see what obscure channel it was on. Eventually found it about three holes in, and it was fantastic. And I think most of that was to do with Brady. Like, I don't hold me to this, right? Because I don't know, I haven't watched it all. But has there been a worse player that's ever been televised?
Charles Barkley would be the only one.
He's brutal, is he?
I'll send you a clip of his swing later on. It has to be
I've seen it. But, you know, I don't know what Charles Barkley plays off, and he was laying on the smack last night as well. But Tom Brady, it turns out, plays off seven.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. I know the US players, their handicap is far more generous and impressive than ours over here. But I would say even his seven by American standards is a vanity that's a vanity handicap.
Stop. Like, so he went from being the worst player that's ever been televised to Tiger Woods in the space of about 30 seconds, right?
As soon as Barkley called him out.
Oh, unbelievable stuff. And I was getting called out left, right and centre. Like, Brooks Koepka was on the line, essentially taking the mick out of him, saying, oh, listen, I'll give you 100K if you manage a par in the front nine, which, I don't know, did he manage a par? I know he obviously got a birdie, so I'm presuming he had to fork up, by the way.
Yeah.
But all of the shots that I'd watched, 20 odd of them in the interim, not one of them could you look at and go, this guy's played golf before.
No.
Oh, no. It was good.
And then they rallied on the back nine. We're going to talk to Shane Ryan, really good journalist. He's written a great book before, Slaying the Tiger, A Year Inside the Ropes on the new PGA Tour, about it. I mean, a little bit about the actual golf, and Tiger looked to be in really good shape. But it was also maybe a little sample of where broadcasting could go with golf. You know, if we're saying that to be a professional sports person, part of it is to entertain, and you know, all professional athletes are talking about how they can't wait to get back out and give people something to get involved in again and enjoy again, there is an entertainment component to it. I am now of the opinion that golf, aside from the four majors where a bit of tradition should be preserved, but I think actually there's a real argument with professional golf that they should all be in mic'd up carts with cameras, a bit like last night. They zip around, slow play is gone, waiting in between shots is gone. And the whole miking them up and having the commentary be able to maybe ask them a question, obviously it couldn't happen in tournament golf as often as it happened last night. But maybe at certain points, if it's agreed, okay, at 2 points in a round, you can chat to me when I'm on a tee box about how the round is going, etc. The players may not like it initially, but I mean, if they want to sell golf, save golf and make it an entertaining package for people,
yeah.
Last night could go down as a pretty interesting moment in the next 100 years of the game.
I think what it showed was that last weekend, was it last weekend or the weekend before that?
Yeah, last week.
And we were talking about that, I think, on Monday. And I think what it showed was that that failed, essentially, not because of the dynamic of the format or the lack of fans, because the lads just weren't great. Whereas last night, there was all sorts going on. Mm. As you say, Tiger was on fire. It'll be interesting to see if we are in, because I know that I made the point last week that it didn't work for me because it wasn't alive enough. It wasn't a load of gun. It just felt all a bit fake. Whereas last night had a bit more of an edge to it, which you will get automatically with regular events. It'll be interesting to see how willing, like the Tom Brady's who are bombing out left, right and centre, how willing they are to jump on the mic. But, Jamie Redknapp was saying it there in the previous clip. Like, if it's this or nothing, give me this.
Mm. Will, we've Gary Neville coming up here.
Yeah, we do. Gary Neville's kind of been worrying about the football pyramid below the top flight in England because the Huddersfield owner, Phil Hodgson, was speaking at the weekend. He predicted that as many as 60 English Football League clubs could go out of business if the coronavirus crisis continues. He says serious financial restructuring is needed to save football in England. And Neville, not just as a former Manchester United captain or as a pundit, he speaks sometimes with his Salford hat on. He's the co-owner of that club. And he's appealing now to the Premier League to try and help out the lower divisions.
From day one, I've said that, you know, it will be July, August, September, October, where the real pressure comes. I think clubs obviously had have a loss at this moment in time through the games that have obviously been cancelled due to this season. I think League One clubs will vote to end the season and they'll end up with the playoffs similar to League Two. I think the Championship will probably go ahead and play. But Richard Masters did an interview that was slipped in over the weekend with our friends at the BBC, where he said that he wouldn't be putting in place a short-term funding package in the coming months because he was concentrating on the Premier League clubs. That's what I'm seeing, to be fair, all the way over football. Everybody's looking down at their own feet and they're not seeing the carnage that's coming economically in the next 3 to 4 months. You know, I wanted more from the Premier League from day one on this. I'm continually disappointed by them and their stance. I think what the Huddersfield owner says is quite alarming. I would never have imagined and don't think it will be 50, 60 clubs personally. I don't see any evidence of that, but then he may be closer to it than I am. But I do think there'll be clubs considering going into administration in the next, I think, 3 to 4 months, just to basically save themselves. And then there's obviously the situation where you've got how the league deal with that. So I do think there is a looming nightmare economically for the EFL clubs, quite a few of them. Whether it's up to 60, I'm not sure.
Gary Neville speaking there. Lads, what's up with Will's line? It sounds like he's underwater, says Tony. There is a Mexico 86 quality to your line, Will.
Oh, that is quite worrying, because I think it was okay when I came on. Is it still bad now?
There's a nostalgic quality to it. We
if you love Mexico 86, Will, it's beautiful.
If you start shouting right. different class, and we'll be right back there.
You call yourself PK, flying it.
Now, Manchester United news, Will.
Yeah, Odion Ighalo looks set to leave Manchester United next week. The Red Devils have been unable to reach an agreement with Shanghai Shenhua to extend the Nigerian forward's loan spell. Ighalo impressed in his short spell at Old Trafford, scoring 4 goals in 5 games before the pandemic. Huge game in Germany tomorrow. It is their Klassiker, and the team news is in ahead of that in terms of injuries. Thiago won't be playing for Bayern Munich. The Spanish midfielder sat out Bayern's win over Frankfurt at the weekend with a muscle injury, and he was unable to train today. Dortmund, for their part, are sweating over the fitness of defender Mats Hummels, who have picked up an injury at the weekend. Zlatan Ibrahimovic could miss the rest of the Serie A season. The veteran Swedish striker picked up an injury. It's suspected ruptured Achilles at AC Milan training this morning. Could be the end of his spell as well. He's due to leave the club in June. Well, we have a first fixture for the La Liga season as well. It's going to be Sevilla against Real Betis, the Seville derby on June the 11th. It's going to be the first game after the restart. They got permission at the weekend to get La Liga back going on the 8th of June. Javier Tebas, the Spanish La Liga president, has said it makes sense to have that game to kick things off. The other teams will be involved on the 12th. And the English Women's Super League and Championship seasons have both been ended with immediate effect. Many Irish players involved in this one. Matches in both divisions have been suspended due to the pandemic, but the FA board making that decision today to cancel the rest of their season.
A few warnings were put out early in all this, Adrian, that women's sport would suffer massively in the midst of all this. Everybody's scrambling to save themselves. There's not the same financial backing in women's sport. So just like that, women's Super League Championship ended. That's come to fruition in a real way then.
Yeah, it's pretty horrific, isn't it? And I think that it just shows you how much of a luxury, like, we tend to look at it, whereas, you know, it's probably at a tough time. Like, certainly this country it's felt, and there's obviously the 20, 20x20 campaign that has helped it. This country felt that we started to take women's sport much more seriously over the last couple of years, and it's probably at a tipping point now, and unfortunately on the wrong side of that tipping point commercially, that it doesn't come at a great time for the, certainly in Ireland, the survival and the advancement of women's sport. Yeah, like, I mean, maybe the same thing applies. You listen to Gary Neville talking about the Huddersfield owner and the closure of whatever it was, 40 or 50 clubs, which seems maybe like a bit of an extreme. And the first thought that jumps to mind is if there's some capacity for the big dogs of the Premier League who have bottomless pits of cash to actually help some of these clubs out for the greater good of football. And maybe you ask yourself the same question about women's sport in this country.
Yeah, it's a fair point. Mick Dawson, meanwhile, we had Philip Brown last week, Will, and he was saying some very worrying things about the game, and he's not a man prone to hyperbole, Philip Brown, in his, what, 20-odd years at the IRFU. Leinster's Mick Dawson has been talking now.
He has. Their chief executive has warned the province are facing a significant financial impact from the pandemic. They're set to refund tickets for the rest of their games this season, as they're likely to be paid behind closed doors. That includes the upcoming quarter-final in the European Champions Cup against Saracens as well. Leinster are not selling season tickets for the 2021 campaign and have instead launched a membership scheme. And Dawson has been explaining why they made that decision.
With the uncertainty over matches next year and people getting through turnstiles and things like that, we felt that we didn't have a product to actually to market and to sell, so we felt it was better to cancel it at this stage. And if the landscape changes, we can always revisit it. The season ticket holder has been a huge part of what we do from a financial point of view for both the running of the professional and the amateur game. And obviously, without these monies, we're going to struggle. I mean, going forward, if we don't get people through the turnstiles, for all the provinces and for the national team to a certain extent, it's going to be very difficult to fund the game, as I say, at both professional and amateur level. We hope that a lot of the season ticket holders will take this opportunity up to actually secure whatever space has become available for the coming season. And in some small way, this will offset some of the revenues we're actually going to forego by not going to the market for season tickets. So it's a relatively small amount of money, and we hope that we'll get the support we think it deserves.
Philip Brown was talking last week, Adrian. He was saying effectively Irish rugby is already spending the 30-plus million it picked up from the sale of property last year and the 5 million it would have taken in courtesy of the new CVC Pro 14 deal. And if you look at the two real professional sports in this country, League of Ireland, which we've talked about a lot and is suffering massively and is under big pressure this season, and then secondly rugby, which had really got into a very good place. I mean, the management in the professional era seemed to have been very smart and frugal at times, but also, you know, had done a really good job. I mean, unlike the League of Ireland, rugby is paying big wages to lots of different players, and with no money coming in, with no money coming in via the international game as well. Philip Brown made the point last week that the game may need state intervention here. Like, we're talking about a huge outlay to players in terms of wages, and now virtually nothing coming in. That is just not sustainable for a whole season, and we're really looking at a whole season of that in the main.
Yeah, the difficulty is the end point of this, isn't it? Yeah, like, it's always been what is the end point? And like, it ends, there's an interesting cycle here that ends obviously with the sports, the governing bodies, the clubs themselves, and begins with things like sponsorships and fans through turnstiles and people buying jerseys and merchandise in general. Like, those, barring the merchandise, and some, I see Connacht had released a jersey for charity in the last week or so, quite successfully. But by and large, whatever clubs, franchises, federations have the capacity to drum up money-wise at the minute is, it's tiny, like whatever bits of merchandise they can sell. Where do their contracts sit commercially with their sponsors is, it will be another interesting question at the back of all this. And I just think the end point is so key that, like, if we knew that we could get to some back to some level of whatever that is, and obviously the TV broadcast money as well, radio broadcast is another factor in all that. But, like, you look at how many of those key pillars that hold up those unions and those sports and those clubs that have just fallen absolutely flat, and there isn't any immediate sign of them coming back. Like, there's a huge uncertainty that I can't see. I think it looks, I think he's absolutely spot on. It's inevitable, if it continues the way that we're going, that for the likes of the IRFU and we've already seen the hit that the media has taken. That will continue if those pillars aren't stood up at some point.
Yeah. Where are we going next, Will?
England international George Cruz will also leave Saracens at the end of the season. It's after 12 years with the current European champions. He is going to Japanese club Panasonic Wild Knights, but he said he's not giving up hope on continuing to play for England. Japan's Prime Minister Shinzo Abe has said he's hopeful a vaccine can be in place ahead of next summer's Tokyo Olympics. The International Olympic Committee pushed back the games until July 2021 due to the pandemic. He added today, the Japanese Prime Minister, he wants supporters to be able to attend the Olympics as it would represent proof of a human victory against the coronavirus.
Well, I don't see how, I don't see how attending the Olympics is any way viable at this stage. Can't see it unless there's a vaccine.
Yeah, you're talking massive international travel. You're talking about stadiums where social distancing wouldn't be possible. I would imagine the vaccine, the idea of having it in place for next year is pretty fanciful as well. For it to be any kind of commercial scale, like all the pharmaceutical companies have been saying, you're talking, even if they concentrated all of their efforts and just trying to get a vaccine together, you're talking 2 to 3 years before they can do so. So I get the impression that the Olympics, when they happen next July, and I've no doubt they will go ahead, they're going to just look very different to what we've seen before.
Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you. Formula One?
Yeah, Silverstone Managing Director Stuart Pringle says they're in talks with the UK government about getting a quarantine exemption. The circuit is hoping to host back-to-back Formula One races in late July, early August. They're asking for teams not to have to go through a 14-day quarantine on entering England. The Formula One season is set to get underway with 2 races in Austria in July. And we could have a very bizarre location for the NBA season when it gets back underway, lads. The NBA has stepped up their talks about using Disney World Resort as the venue to resume their season. They're hoping to house players in isolation on the complex and stage games at the Florida facility. The league have confirmed they're speaking with the National Basketball Players Association and with Disney about the proposal.
It's an incredible facility. Like, it's massive. It's its own world, really. I mean, the players mightn't be that against it. In the main, they're traveling from one venue to another venue night after night. They're on flights. They might enjoy actually just chilling out in one great big bubble for a while. Post Last Dance, like the Jordan Bounce Part 2, I think I might quite get into basketball again. I've got a hunger for it. I've got a thirst for it all of a sudden.
Oh, big time. And actually, Disney seems like such a perfect. On top of watching Preston versus Manchester United in the FA Cup quarterfinals in 1966, Joe, at the weekend, which was quite the watch, I have started watching some of the old basketball games, and I feel exactly like you. I think I'm going to start eating up some of this stuff.
Who are you going to support?
I mean, you'd be tempted to go in with the ball. I was at a Knicks game. I was at the Garden to see the Knicks before, and they were brutal. And they really feel like a team that I should get behind.
Yeah.
You?
I think I might just support Steve Kerr. Can I do that?
He's coaching.
You picked a decent team to support.
Who is he? Well,
he's coaching Golden State. They're like one of the top teams in the league. They posted the best preseason figures ever back in 2017-18, which is pretty much what inspired Jordan to hand over the tapes at that point, because Golden State had broken the Bulls record for the normal season, and then LeBron beat the Warriors in the postseason finals, and so the conversation started again about LeBron being the best ever. And interestingly enough, after this series, The Last Dance was just completed, 77% of people under 35 who responded to an ESPN poll have now picked Jordan over LeBron. So Jordan doesn't tend to let people get ahead of him.
Yeah. Fellas, thanks very much. Will, thank you. Adrian Barry, thank you.
Thanks, Joe.
So again, the plan this evening, Ronan O'Gara and Keith Wood with us after 8 o'clock for Monday Night Rugby. John Barnes, feature interview coming your way between 9 and 10. Up next, Shane Ryan, golf journalist, joins us.